It's Weekend Edition on WNYC. I'm David First. And it's time once again for our Weekend Arts Roundup. WNYC's culture and arts editor Steve Smith is here to shine a spotlight on some of the highlights coming up. Steve, it's good to see you again.
Thank you very much for having me on again.
And to begin today, you're taking us to the Museum of Modern Art's Public School 1 location.
Absolutely. The PS1 just over the river in Long Island City, where Deanna Lawson is having her very first solo exhibition. And the words that kept coming through my mind over and over again when I was walking through this exhibition were things like majesty and dignity. Lawson was born in Rochester in 1979, and her work mostly focuses on sort of subverting and changing our mind about conventional modes of Black representation in photography. That sounds very, very specific, but it's really a broad-ranging show. It just came here from the ICA in Boston. It's at MoMA for a few months now. One of the most appealing things about it, I think, is that it kind of messes around with what you think photography is and does. You know, you think about photography as being, you click the shutter and you've got kind of a representation of reality. But Lawson poses Black men and women in casual clothes or frequently no clothing at all, so watch out if you're taking kids. She puts them in mundane settings like kitchens and bedrooms, and her models just sort of occupy space really unapologetically. They're framed like grand old portraits from old masters that you'd find on canvases at the Met Museum. But then you really start to sort of obsess about these little details that she puts into her images. You know, what's all that stuff on the table supposed to represent? Or why is that curtain hanging on an unfinished, practically unpainted wall? Or why is that model wearing an ankle monitor? The longer you linger among these pictures, the more you're sucked into this kind of really, really delicious complexity. And I just found it completely transporting.
So all of these details are very intentional. These are not models that happen to be standing in a kitchen.
No, absolutely not. Everything about Lawson's images has a naturalistic sense to it, almost like snapshots, but all of these details are really, really highly staged, and it all is sort of meant to give you this very complex story that you're sort of responsible for making up yourself. The show is running through September 5th. You can learn more at moma.org/PS1. This is one I guarantee I'm going to be going back to see again.
Okay, well, now it is time for film. David Lynch and Laura Dern. I mean, it's not overstating things to say that this filmmaker and this actress caused a sensation when Blue Velvet arrived back in 1986. But now a late career film with the two of them is getting a fresh look.
Yeah, and you know, this is the story of, as you've pointed out, a relationship. It's not just about one film. I mean, it is about David Lynch, who's specialized in these weird, surreal mysteries from the very start of his career, and he's turned out some real idiosyncratic classics. I mean, you mentioned Blue Velvet, there's Eraserhead, there's Lost Highway and Mulholland Drive, and that's to say nothing of his cult classic TV series Twin Peaks, which
yes,
came back for the most surprising revival of 2017. And I think it attests to the lingering mystery, but also a real desire for more Lynch, that there was a buzz around a month ago on Twitter when there was a rumor that he's got a secret new film screening at the Cannes Film Festival next week, and that it features one of his most compelling collaborators, Laura Dern.
Didn't he deny this?
Yeah, there may be no truth to this rumor, but people are clinging to it. But while everybody waits around, possibly in vain, the last film that Lynch created with Dern is on screens again. Inland Empire is a 3-hour mystery filmed without a script and shot entirely with a low-resolution handheld digital camera. All of these things created a real challenge for viewers when it first came out. And the film sort of deals really, really ruthlessly and bluntly with the way women are treated in Hollywood. It's kind of like the even scarier version of Mulholland Drive. It's terrifying and baffling, even by Lynch's standard, and it has an incredible performance by Laura Dern playing a double role. Now, as low res as this film was originally, a 4K restoration has been making the rounds just lately, and it's kind of letting everyone see this film as if for the first time. It is playing this weekend at the IFC Center, but There is a special one-off screening on Wednesday at Lincoln Center's Walter Reed Theater, and that one has the added benefit of a live talk by New York film critic Melissa Anderson. Melissa has written a brilliant little book about Inland Empire and really about the relationship between Lynch and Dern. The book will be on hand. She'll be signing it. It's guaranteed to be illuminating, and you can find out more at filmlink.org.
Can you spell that?
FILMLINC.org. The C is for center.
FILMLINC.org. Okay, and let's wrap up with some music today.
Absolutely. Let's look at Ron Carter, who is celebrating his 85th birthday at Carnegie Hall on Tuesday night. Ron Carter is said to be the most recorded bass player of all time. He has more than 2,200 credits to his name starting in the late 1950s. Carter has worked with everyone from Thelonious Monk and Milt Jackson, definitely very much associated with Miles Davis, but more recently he's recorded with figures like Roberta Flack and even the hip-hop group A Tribe Called Quest. He even popped into Radio City Music Hall just this last month to jam with Grateful Dead veteran Bob Weir. This coming Tuesday night, Carnegie Hall is Ron's house. He's going to be taking over the big stage in Isaac Stern Auditorium, celebrating his own birthday with three of his own groups. Now, the one that I really love is the Golden Striker Trio, which is with pianist Donald Vega and guitarist Russell Malone. He's also got a quartet with the terrific sax player Jimmy Green and an eight-piece group that includes four cellos. He'll have a few other legendary bassists on hand to pay tribute, like Stanley Clark and Buster Williams. And the program has everything from jazz standards to Carter originals. And all the details you need are at carnegiehall.org.
And you can find out information about all of these events also if you go to wnyc.org. WNYC's culture and arts editor, Steve Smith. Thanks again.
Thank you, David.
And let's go out with a little bit of music from the birthday boy, Ron Carter.